test 1, 2, 3. Can you guys hear me there?
Hello?
The online learning task force will come to order. Today is Wednesday, September 30th. It's 1:15 p.m. And we are meeting in...
Yeah, I can hear you guys just fine. The meeting hasn't started yet. But you should be hearing audio right now.
Can you hear me talking right now?
Hello, hi. Can you hear us?
Yes, 1, 2, 3. Should be seeing video and audio?
Yeah, this is Edward.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go back. So, what we're learning technology, remember, as you can tell, hearing today is going to be a very important thing and maybe challenging. Mm-hmm. So, please turn off your cell phones, your PDAs, and your Blackberries. I'm going to do it too, all the way off, because this room in particular is very sensitive to the vibrations, and we want everyone to be able to hear. So we are going to open an informational hearing today. We have Bob Tate from the National Education Association, who's going to give us a national overview of online learning issues. This is part two. You'll remember in our first meeting, we had another overview of online learning issues. And the second part of our meeting, we are going to be breaking up into some work groups, and we'll talk more about that when we get to that point of the discussion. Mr. Tate, can you hear us?
I can hear you, yes.
Well, welcome. If you would start by introducing yourself for the record, we're eager to learn from you today.
Okay, he's going to have to move the microphone closer.
Thank you. My name is Bob Tate.
You need to move the microphone a little closer because we can't hear you. Please.
Good afternoon. Is that better?
It is. Do we have volume here that we can turn up?
Can you, do you have volume on your set there?
I do. Is that better? Is that better?
Getting better.
Can you hear me? Is that better?
Oh, much better, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it too better?
No, it's
Thank
fine.
You, that's okay. Perfect. Thank you very much. Welcome.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. My name is Bob Tate. I'm a senior policy analyst at the National Education Association. I work for one of the policy departments at NEA, where I've been since 1993. And my assignments include monitoring charter school developments and online learning, principally. I'd like to say that it's a pleasure and an honor to have the opportunity to address this group, which is wrestling with issues of great importance for the future of public education and has weighty responsibilities. I'd like to say at the outset that if there are questions that we don't have time to get to in the time we have allotted to, I'm glad to try to help with those with information needs or questions if and as they come up. NEA's view on online learning can be summarized pithily as supplement, not supplant. NEA believes, and we have acted on this belief, that technology plays a crucial role in education. It's hard to say with all the cliches out there which one beaten to death, but all of us are aware that the times we live in are changing very rapidly, that workplaces and our private lives are changing tremendously on account of technology, and that young people are learning in ways that are quite different than some of the traditional ways and some of the ways that have been the norm in our public education system. NEA is committed to working with organizations to try to bridge the gap and support the efforts of public education to better integrate technology into the public education system. This is essential if the advantages and the opportunities that technology presents can be taken advantage of and be used to help improve the quality of public education. So we believe that online education as a supplement integrated into what public education and public schools do can, with important quality assurance provisions, play an important and valuable role in improving the quality of education and creating greater student engagement in particular. NEA does not believe that an education that consists either entirely or almost entirely of an online situation can provide a comprehensive education for young people. So we draw a distinction between supplementing what our so-called brick-and-mortar schools are doing with technology on the one hand versus what some people advocate, which is replacing the brick-and-mortar school entirely with a solely online learning experience. We have members, we represent members who work in entirely online schools. For example, in your neighboring state of Washington, which just last year passed some legislation to address some quality issues and accountability issues that have been raised as a result of their experiences there. The number of solely online schools in the United States, while it is growing, is still relatively small. And the empirical base to try to judge its effects on students is, unfortunately, at this point, it is very thin. The studies that have been done tend to be dated in modern terminology. The studies that have been done of students who took solely online schooling in California and Pennsylvania earlier in this decade show that the results for the students were worse or in some cases comparable to those of their neighborhood public schools. I understand that recently a study was presented to you and was represented as making a strong case for entirely online learning. And that would be the study that was sponsored by the United States Department of Education. I'm having trouble locating the title of it, but I believe it's the study that Ms. Patrick had called to your attention. I think it's important to note from the key findings the qualifications that the study authors placed on their findings. They note that what I had just said, which is that few rigorous research studies of the effectiveness of online learning for K-12 students have been published. A systematic search of the research literature from 1994 through 2006 found no experimental or controlled quasi-experimental studies comparing the learning effects. What they found, interestingly, was that there was some support for the benefits of combining traditional and face-to-face and online instruction. The students who experienced that situation seemed to do the best. Most of the studies that are looked at in the meta-analysis are taken from higher education, and the authors are careful to note that there are many other factors involved in these studies which could account for modest differences in student achievement. In terms of some of the accountability issues, again, I would encourage you to take a look at what has transpired in your neighboring state of Washington. There was a state auditor's report that came out which showed that there was overpayment made to some online schools in the amount of $3.5 million. And there were three districts that were unable to provide documentation to support the number of students reported in their alternative learning experience internet programs. Again, Washington has sought to address some accountability issues in their legislation passed earlier this year. What are some of the quality assurance factors that we believe are important for supplemental online learning? We believe that courses should be managed to ensure effective student and school participation, and provide for regular interaction between students and their instructors and online classmates, and offer opportunities for offline activities as well. What we find in some of the full-time online schools is that, for example, again, using Washington as an example, there's a requirement that the supervising teacher must have some contact with the student at least once per month. The quality and the extent of the contact varies widely, and it's very difficult to monitor what in fact is going on. There are reports that it is, especially where there is a parent is not home, it is significant numbers of the students are not focusing on their work, and this may help account for the poor test result performances. We believe that the teachers who teach online courses and use online learning in the classroom, they should be licensed in the subject matter taught, and they should be also skilled in the learning theories, the technologies, and the teaching pedagogies appropriate for an online environment. So we stress teacher involvement and also preparation. The skills that are involved in teaching online courses are not the same as they are in teaching face-to-face in all respects. In order to try to advance quality use of online learning, NEA has worked with some of the leading technology advocacy organizations to produce a couple of documents, which I wanted to call to your attention. One is a guide to online high school courses. The other is a guide to teaching online courses. Again, I mentioned people who do it will tell you that there are some differences in teaching effectively using technology online versus face-to-face, and teachers need to have the professional development and be prepared to be able to do this effectively. We work with other technology organizations to help produce these documents in order to try to advance the discussion of what some of those skills are. We believe that the students who take online coursework, they should receive the preparation and support necessary to enable them to function effectively in an online environment. This means they need appropriate equipment, technical support, libraries and laboratories. They need appropriate support services. If they have technical difficulties with some of the equipment, they need to be able to have a way to address that problem. They need reasonable student-to-instructor ratios that allow for individualized interaction, accurate course descriptions and clear expectations prior to enrollment, opportunities for appropriate student-to-student interaction, courses that are as rigorous as similar courses delivered by more traditional means, and courses that meet accreditation standards. We believe that multiple mechanisms, including appropriate technological safeguards, should be used on a regular basis to validate and authenticate student work. Some of the organizations with whom we have worked in the past are the Consortium for School Networking, also known as COSIN, the International Society for Technology and Education, the State Educational Technology Directors Association, and also NACOL, the North American Council for Online Learning. Ms. Patrick is with INACOL, their international affiliate, and the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future. Also, as an aside, on my own time, to try to help me think about these issues and how public education should be moving to integrate technology more aggressively and more effectively into what is done in our schools, I'd like to recommend a recently published book called Rethinking Education in the Age of Technology. It is by Alan Collins and Richard Halverson. And again, I recommend it not as an endorsement from our organization, but we wouldn't agree with everything that's said in here, but I find it a very readable and short book that raises powerful questions about how public education can move to close the gap in how students learn outside of school versus how they have traditionally learned inside of schools. I'm going to stop now. I know that the questions, people are going to have questions, and I'm glad to do the best that I can try to answer those here. If I don't have an answer to a question here, I will try to address it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tate. And thanks for joining us all the way from Vienna. You get the prize for greatest distance for the day. Colleagues, I just want to make sure that you understand the technological boundary that we have on our discussion here today. The building can support only one teleconference at a time, and there is another one scheduled for 2 o'clock. So we'll need to manage our questions and answers inside about the next 27 minutes. So I may be a little aggressive with the time management. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Can you hear me, Mr. Tate?
Yes, I can.
Oh, thank you very much. Senator Suzanne Bonamici and Representative Gelser mentioned something about Virginia. I don't know if you're in Austria or Virginia. In any event, you're in Virginia. You talked about the study of being problematic, and that study was discussed at our last task force meeting. And I asked this question that I've been pondering really since I've been looking at this issue, and it has to do with trying to determine whether the success of students in online education is attributable to the model and the curriculum, or is it attributable in part or in whole to the fact that the student has a learning coach or basically one-on-one teacher. And so my question is, do you have data that compares the results of a student in online education with the results of a student in a brick-and-mortar school who has, for example, a parent at home who helps or assists them with their schoolwork? Thank you.
I wish we did. I'm not aware of any, but I'm glad to try to inquire.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Devlin.
In our last meeting, the speaker talked about one area that I think we are required. I know that we are required in the work plan for this group to address, and that is the issue of teacher-to-student ratios. And from her presentation and from other things that we have heard, a standard sort of brick-and-mortar teacher-to-student ratio may not be the best form in which to judge interaction. And she made some reference to some work that had been done in terms of best practices in terms of teacher-student interaction. Are you aware of any work in that area? And what do you mean in terms of one of the highest probably things to judge a program by is the amount of participation and interaction between the student and the teacher?
Well, on the teacher-student interaction, one of the major issues in Washington is actually workload. I think some of the people, some people form the impression that somehow online coursework is less labor-intensive than face-to-face instruction in a brick-and-mortar school. And so far, the experience does not bear that out. I'm not aware of any rigorous empirical studies that have tried to document that, so I have to fall back on the anecdotal evidence. But I know that when you talk to people who teach online, they will tell you, look, one of the great things about it is I get to walk around in my jammies all day working from home, but you know, I'm also working well into the evening, and for people who are thinking about doing this as a way to reduce their workload, that is not the typical experience. Now obviously there are some exceptions where people are not as conscientious as they should, but again, most of the reports that we have are that the vast majority of online educators are very conscientious and believe in what they're doing. It's just what they're doing is not necessarily going to be less labor-intensive than what happens face-to-face in face-to-face instruction in brick-and-mortar schools. Washington, in fact, established a maximum of 58 total students per teacher as their maximum load. Now, again, they're not, it's not a one-to-one comparison situation because they're teaching multiple courses and they're not analogous situations, but it's a substantial amount of work. Let's see. And in terms of the trying to address the issue of, I think this, your second question had to do with how do you determine if there is greater engagement. Again, most great questions
in terms of interaction.
Interaction. Again, it's a great question, and I'm not aware of any studies that have been done to try to document how that takes place and what the comparative levels of interaction are between students and teachers.
Thank you, Superintendent Glaze.
One of the areas that I have concerns about are the special populations and online learning. The question that I would have for you is, do you have any research showing the efficacy of online charter schools for special populations, i.e. special education, English language learners, that type of thing? I'd be interested in whether you've got any research that shows the effectiveness of online charter schools for those populations. The other question I would have is whether or not you're aware of any research out there that demonstrates the efficacy of charter online learning for the K-12 spectrum. In other words, has any research been done to show the efficacy of online learning with primary age students compared to intermediate level students compared to high school students to see if there is a significant difference in the effectiveness of that education?
Thank you. In terms of special education, charter schools for special education students and charter schools, the work that I've seen suggests that students with disabilities are underrepresented in charter schools on an aggregate national basis compared to their representation in traditional regular neighborhood public schools. But beyond that, a concern that some have raised is that it seems as though, in particular, students with the more severe kinds of disabilities are particularly underrepresented in charter schools. So this is an issue in terms of when a family may visit a charter school. They will receive a very enthusiastic tour, but a lot of times they're signaled directly or indirectly that, you know, I really wish that we could accommodate your special needs, but unfortunately we can't do that. In terms of the effectiveness of how do special ed students in charter schools do, I have not seen any studies on that. Again, that's a terrific question. I can't help but think, gee, somebody really ought to be looking at that. But I've not seen a study on the comparative effectiveness. And similarly, on the primary, intermediary, and high school, is there other studies on the effectiveness of online, of charter online learning for different K-12 groups? Again, I these are wonderful questions. I really wish there were more resources that were being devoted to trying to answer these questions that policy people are, of course, want to have answers to in deciding how to spend taxpayer dollars. But I've not seen any studies that address those questions. There are very few studies, as I've mentioned, that even try to address the overall achievement level questions. The ones that have for solely online learning in California, Pennsylvania, and anecdotally in Washington, have so far not been favorable.
Mr. Tate, could I just ask for a clarification? When you were talking about special education, you were referencing charter schools. Were you talking about charter schools as a whole, or were you talking specifically about the subset of charter schools that are online schools? I think the question was specifically online schools.
Well, my remarks had to do with data that I've seen on charter schools taken as a whole. It is not broken down. At least I have not seen it broken down by online charter schools versus other kinds of charter schools.
Great. Thank you very much for that clarification.
Sure.
More questions? Ms. Regan.
Hi, this is Bobby Regan with the Portland School District, Portland School Board. I had a question. You had mentioned, that online learning, in your opinion, is more effective as a supplement rather than supplanting traditional schooling. And so I had two parts to the question. One is, when you're talking about supplementing, are you talking about courses that are kind of catch-up courses, getting ahead courses, or traditional courses? I mean, do you have any sense of that? And more importantly, are there any states who are doing supplemental online education really well? And if so, how are the states supporting that?
Thank you. Supplemental online, first of all, it's not my opinion. It's the opinion of my organization,
right,
regarding online learning. But online as a supplement is being used in a wide variety of ways. It's being used for credit recovery purposes. For a major use of it is for to help provide course offerings that cannot be offered to students attending rural schools. But there's a wide... There are charter school online courses that are offered for targeted special student populations. There's a wide variety of ways in which supplemental, in which online learning is used as a supplement. And of course, it is integrated into the school in many places. The states that are offering supplemental online education, again, I really wish I could. There were studies that I was aware of that looked at their efficacy and getting better results for students. Again, unfortunately, I've not seen any. The state of Florida, I know, has a very large online set of course offerings. And I'm glad to take another look to see if anyone has tried to evaluate it. As I said, I've not seen anything on that to this point.
Can I do a follow-up question?
Yes, follow-up.
So in the state of Florida, who is it that's providing the course offerings? Is the state engaged in that specifically, their Department of Education? How is it done? Are districts doing it on their own?
It's set up under the rubric of the state, so the state makes the courses available.
Senator Devlin?
I believe in Florida. I may be wrong, but from what I've read, the state established... what is, in essence, a nonprofit entity that provides courses, and it actually is the largest enrollment institution of its type in the nation. So.
That's my understanding, yes.
Ms. Vanderstick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Bob, this is Courtney Vanderstick with the Oregon Education Association, and again, thank you for being with us today, and I'm sure you'll get even with me someday for pulling you into this, but it's okay.
Thanks, Courtney.
One of the challenges that I think I'm hearing from your comments is that we are trying to create policy here, that we want the policy to serve our students well. We want the policy to serve the taxpayers of Oregon well, and we're operating without a really sound research base beyond what we know has been effective at the college level. But at least from the NEA's perspective, there hasn't been as much research in our pre-K through 12 system. Is that an accurate restatement? I don't want to misstate what you've said.
No, I mean, you hear me. You're asking me great questions, and I don't have answers. So, no, I think that's absolutely a fair statement that there are very important issues and possible implications from moving to expand entirely online schooling. And we just don't have independent studies. Now, there are studies that are put out by companies that are offering their services in this regard. But, you know, I think a word of caution is in order in putting too much stock into those studies.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Last chance. Any further questions? No, Mr. Tate, thank you very much. I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us. Do you have any concluding thoughts for us?
Just that we're watching your efforts with great interest. I mean, these are weighty issues, and wish you well, and let us know. Again, I will try. I will keep looking around for research that addresses all these excellent questions that you've asked. I will keep looking, and if I can find anything, I'm glad to share that information with you. But thanks again, and it's, as I said, it's an honor to be invited in to speak to this distinguished group.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Turn off. Okay. Do you have the lid? Can I take the lid off? Okay. All right. Thank you all very much. So you'll note on the agenda that we're doing something a little different for the rest of the afternoon. I know one of the things that we wrestled with last month as we all met was how to cope with this great body of work and a very large group with a very small amount of time. It would seem that we are tasked with a great challenge. And so we thought that a good way to begin tackling that was to break us up into some smaller groups so that we could get everyone's thoughts and ideas on the table. And there is very literally an idea on the table from Superintendent Glaze, who has sent some thoughts that he had, and he's formulated them into some proposed solutions. You'll find that at your place. You won't find that at your place?
I don't think so.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I'll just interject really quickly. There weren't enough copies for everyone, so I suggested they share it with the co-chairs and his work group, and then share it more broadly when we have the information available for everyone.
Got it.
Sorry.
I was confused because it was on my pile under my script.
You're special.
All right. So what we're going to do is put together some information for all of us to bring back. There's a list of questions that were sent to you. Hopefully you all received them prior to the meeting. We're going to break up into three groups. We'll tell you about the groups in a minute. But what we'd like you to do when you get into these small groups is to wrestle a little bit with the questions. And your task is not necessarily to solve the issue that you have identified within that question. And we recognize that some of the questions could even be read in a multitude of ways, and that's part of what we're after here. But we'd also like you to start looking at them and beginning to distinguish, what do you think we as this group can resolve now prior to the February session? What are things that we should continue to work on in the future for the legislature to address at a later time? And what are the kinds of issues that we want to provide some guidance to the State Board of Education for? And what we're going to do in these three groups is kind of keep track of where folks are and see what type of consensus we have coming back, both around the ideas for solutions and answers to these questions, but also for sequencing to see where we're at in terms of tackling those issues. Senator Devlin, do you have anything to add to the task?
The only thing is, I think both the co-chair and I thought in terms of the committee, which is relatively large, that it would, doing this at this opportunity, would give people a greater opportunity to participate so that we can get a very clear idea of what issues the committee believes are important, what direction maybe we should be going in, where we need more information, as indicated by the co-chair, what issues this committee should actually be dealing with directly, which we should send back to the Board of Education with perhaps guidance and potentially timelines to address the issues, and which we don't believe should probably go forward at this point, basically, or sit until such time as somebody decides that they are that we either have enough information or they're important enough to address. Does everyone have the short sheet that we have on?
I think this is just us.
That's the
content. This is just
us. No, this
yeah.
One. Oh, okay. We made a modest effort at trying to define how, with the Department of Education, trying to define how various funds that go to special needs or, as determined here, ESEA funds to charter schools. This document is about the second or third reiteration of this. The first documents were probably... the first one was probably undecipherable by someone unless they were in actually had worked with this on a daily basis, so this still has problems. But I think what you will see in most of this document is that the decision on whether to pass the funds on to the charter school is largely left up to the sponsoring school district, and that in most cases there's not an automatic transfer of the funds. But we just wanted, because there had been some questions about this, and we're just trying to get you as much information as possible.
Thank you very much. So get your pens out. I'm going to tell you where you are going with your group. For those of you that are in the audience, these discussions are open, so come on in and make yourselves comfortable around, kind of on the outside of the table, and similar to a committee hearing, just not that we don't like you, but you need to be observers and not participants in the conversation. It's just an extension of this meeting. So in room 226, it is going to be staffed by Aaron Seiler, and Senator Devlin is going to be the facilitator. And in that group will be Representative Dembro, Mr. Dempsey, Mr. Horning, and Dr. Scalise. And again, that room number is S226.
It is actually the Democratic Caucus room on the second floor of the Senate wing. So right as you come out the elevator, turn right and walk into the office, and you are there.
Great. The second group will be in room 177, and that is going to be staffed by Ian Tolleson. And I'm going to facilitate that committee, or that, not that committee, that subgroup. And that group will include Senator Morse, Superintendent Temple, Ms. Parent, and Ms. Reagan. Is it Reagan or Regan?
Regan.
Regan. Yes. I just alternate, assuming every other time I'll get it right.
I'll respond, don't worry.
Great. And again, that's room 177. Where is room 177?
It's down past the hearing rooms that are at the end of the hall on the House side.
Yeah. Great. And the third group will be meeting in room 350, which some of us know a little too well. It's on the third floor in the middle. And this one will be staffed by Ms. Richardson, and it will be moderated by Ms. Squire. And the other members of this subgroup are Senator Bonamici, Representative Huffman, Ms. Hunt, Ms. Vanderstick, and Mr. Lynn. And again, all three groups have the same list of questions and the same assignments, and the goal really is to start to bring back this information in a coordinated fashion for our next meeting. We will not be coming back here after these subgroups. Is that correct?
That's correct, and we can go as late as 5 o'clock, but our intent is to go as long as necessary. So if we go for 2 hours, that's fine, but we do have 3 hours in which to complete the work.
Correct. So you are limited. You must complete your work within 3 hours, but if you finish your work, you are not you're not forced to stay longer. Yes.
Oh, and too.
Are you free to go out? Yes, you're free to go. You're not on a committee?
Oh,
we missed you.
My oversight.
So what about, yes, will you come on mine?
I will.
Room 177, is there anybody else that we missed? Did we miss anybody else?
I wasn't going to
admit it. I'm really sorry about that.
But now,
you will meet all as a group again next on October 19th in the morning. We'll get that time to you in the near future. Now, what do I do in terms of the gavel? Do I recess?
Well,
the
full task force will adjourn.
Okay. So any final business for the good of the order? Seeing none, the task force on online learning is adjourned.